Welcome to the Nui Tech People podcast. My name is James McDonald. I spend my days interviewing some of the most innovative people working in the tech industry and hear some amazing stories. Each fortnight, we release a new episode sharing these conversations. This podcast aims to showcase the tech projects happening right here in Newcastle, provide key resources to help you grow your tech career, and share insights into the future of the Newcastle tech scene. Hope you enjoy this episode. Welcome to another episode of Nui Tech People. On today's episode, I interview Adam Amos from Robotic Systems. Most interesting part of this conversation from my end was hearing why Adam and his team of operating from 6 a.m. through to 2 p.m. as their standard workday. Hope you enjoy this episode. Welcome to another episode of Nui Tech People. Today we have Adam Amos, Director of Robotic Systems. Welcome, Adam.
Thank you very much for having me.
Mate, for those that don't know who you are, can you give us a bit of an overview of who you are and what you're currently working on?
So, my name's Adam. I'm the Director of Robotic Systems. We're an engineering consultancy based in Mayfield. Our skills are in electronics, hardware, and software. And we specialize in accelerating the journey from crazy concepts to a prototype, and then a prototype to a profitable product.
Right. So, you're working with clients. Clients come to you with some crazy problem, and yep. You'd work with them on fixing that?
Yeah, that's right. So we connect with people in the mining and agricultural industries mostly.
Yeah.
And a big part of what we do is take their practical experience with some problem, something in their business, and we turn that into a piece of machinery that they own the rights to and can sell.
Yeah, right. So they actually own that. So you build the product for them, help them design that, but yet they own the product.
100%. It's all about them. And in the last 12 months, we've achieved 4 patents for our customers on technology we've developed on their behalf. And we've shipped $3 million worth of product from our facility in Mayfield West. So a patent for us is the highest possible accolade we can get because, you know, awards are awesome,
yeah. But
a patent means you've proven you've done something new and it's amazing.
Yeah, right. Local success rate out of Mayfield. And I imagine a great deal of the community that actually knows about robotic systems and where the success you're having now. If you wind it back a little bit, where did it start? How have you gone from where it started to where you are at today?
Yeah, okay. So nobody knowing about us is definitely my fault over the years. But I guess where I started was in robotics competitions,
yeah. Probably
in the last couple of years at university. It's always kind of just exploded out of me. I'm drawn to engineering robotics, kind of like a moth to a flame. I don't think I could do anything else.
Yeah. Right.
And so I started getting involved in robotics competitions on my own bat.
Yeah.
And the most important one, or the one I really gravitated to, was a drone competition run by the CSIRO in Outback Queensland.
Yeah, right.
And it was all about designing a drone as an amateur to take off from an airport, fly 10 kilometers, search for an area of bush for a lost bushwalker. And if you could find the bushwalker, drop a water bottle to them, and whoever got the closest to the bushwalker won.
And you had to actually design the drone itself?
Yeah, that's right.
Build the drone?
Design and build, fly the whole thing.
Wow.
And look, I don't want to, you know, give any illusions here. I was not successful, but I really gave it a good go over about 6 years.
Yeah, wow.
And so I found that by telling that story when I was in the workplace when I just graduated uni,
yeah,
I started to develop a bit of a cult following with my customers. So I was doing a similar sort of job to what I was doing now,
yeah. But
for another company that was head officed out of Melbourne.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, one day that company went broke and I was left with a handful of projects here in Sydney, halfway through. And all my customers insisted that I keep going, and that was 8 years ago, and all those customers came back. We've won some more customers and we've got 9 full-time staff now. Out at Mayfield West.
Yeah, right. I don't think you mentioned, you know, your fault that people don't know about you. I think it's just a Newcastle. It's like a Newcastle mindset. A lot of the time, we have a lot of local success stories who don't have the ego and want to shout it from the rooftops, but I'm doing some really cool things based here in Newcastle. Like, we've had a number of guests on the podcast where who have designed or built products that have got like international contracts, and no one even knows about them. I think it's a pretty common story here in Newcastle.
Yeah, that's right. And I can definitely have to take a lot of responsibility for that. I mean, a few years ago, I made the fatal mistake of putting a picture of a drone on our website.
Yeah.
And we kind of alluded that we were going into the drone industry. And that resulted in us being the drone guys for a long time. Oh, yeah. So the people that did know about us knew us as the drone guys.
Yeah, right.
So I definitely contributed to that confusion.
Yeah.
So, I'm getting a lot of professional help now to help unwind that damage.
Yeah, right. And that's it. And, you know, clarifying that message. And that's just part of business as well, I think. It's just that as you evolved and, you know, started with just yourself and a bunch of contracts, and now you've got 9 employees, clarifying that message and all that. Sounds like, you know, robotics is your jam, not necessarily marketing and messaging, right? And how to market your company you might be building, right?
Big time. I can definitely say after 8 years of doing that experiment, it's not what I'm good at.
Yeah.
So, get a right team around you to make that happen. So.
Nice. Mate, you made mention right at the start that, you know, this is probably all you'll ever do, that, you know, you're drawn like a moth to a flame. How important do you think it is for both for yourself and if you were to give advice to others for you to be passionate about what you're actually doing?
It's really the precursor to everything. So if you can't wake up and care about what it is you're going to do that day, you know, why do it? You know, you're going to suck at it. For starters,
yeah.
If your heart's not in it, you're really just grinding it. And we're talking about a 2,000 hours a year commitment of you're going to, you know, signing yourself up to. So,
yeah.
You know, really have a good think about what it is you want to do. For me, it sounds so easy because, you know, it's often people think it's really cool. And for me, I found that relatively easy because it was just all I could do. But for people that struggle with that, you know, it's not an easy task to figure that out. So don't feel bad that you don't know, but it'll take some work to figure out, but it's well worth the effort.
Yeah, nice. And so you made mention you're drawn to it. I imagine that started pretty early. Like where did the love of robotics start for you?
I actually asked my mum this question a while ago, and she sent me a picture from the first robotics competition I went into in 1993. And it was to build a robot vacuum. Don't get me wrong, it was a handy vac sticky taped to a model, like a remote control digger.
Yeah.
And my big innovation was a clip that held down the handy vac button. So
that sounds good to me.
So from then, I guess that's the first recorded evidence.
Yeah, nice. And then that's obviously evolved. You obviously honed your skills. Were you a tinkerer like while you're at high school? Is that you continue through that phase? Is that sort of how you continue to build your skills?
So through high school, yeah, definitely doing a lot of pointless projects. There's probably the big turning point for me was probably at the end of university and was in one of the robotics competitions where I was about to finish university. I didn't really feel like I had enough skills in any one particular area to develop something myself. So, you know, I couldn't afford to go and get somebody to help me.
Hmm.
So I went all in on this idea of getting trained up in a specific programming language, and I decided I was going to become the guy for this programming language.
What programming language was that?
It's going to be a real obscure one. It's National Instruments LabVIEW.
There are.
And the reason I chose it is because it is a language designed to focus on outcomes with a piece of hardware. And it basically constrains you in what you can do. But think about the Lego Mindstorms and that sort of thing, but make it more aggressive. And I know there's some guys, if they watch this, that I work with that often tease me saying that it's like Lego.
Yeah.
So.
mate, that's it. I think that's also what you may mention over there is just being known as the person in a really narrow field.
Yeah.
I think I've spoken on the podcast before about depth over width, like going super deep in a niche. And becoming really good at that as opposed to sort of being sort of okay across everything.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of power in that.
Yeah, that's right. And that led me, it got me the first job I had at a university. And then when that evolved, it got me a large contract up here with Orica Mining.
Yeah.
That we still maintain this day and have grown.
Yeah, nice. So you made mention of uni. What uni degree did you do?
Engineering mechatronics. at the University of Wollongong.
And how was that experience?
Look, I didn't do well at university. For me, I actually found it a very painful process.
Yeah.
I also made the mistake of, something not for my personality, which was doing a internship that ran for the last couple of years of the university alongside of trying to do university. And for me, I really had a lot of troubles with that.
Yeah.
Stretched out the degree a lot and caused a lot of pain.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a great experience. Definitely didn't take you anywhere down the technical role.
Yeah.
It was with a big defense company in Sydney, and we jockeyed spreadsheets.
Yeah.
And so technically there was definitely no achievement there, but in terms of resume, it looked okay, I guess.
Yeah. And I guess sometimes even those poor experiences at least let you know what you don't like.
Yeah.
Or if you were to take on an intern, you know what to not have them do, because internships can be extremely valuable. I've had people on the podcast and spoken to heaps of people before that have done an internship and then grown on with that company post-university and built really strong careers if it's done well. Yeah. And I've had other people where companies just purely take advantage of people.
Yes.
It can be, it's definitely two ways that can go there.
Yeah, for sure.
So if you were to provide advice to, somebody that's in high school at the moment, has a real interest in robotics or just building things and tinkering, what advice would you give them if they want to sort of build a career to work for a company like Robotic Systems?
The biggest thing you can do is to differentiate yourself with practical skills.
Yeah.
Anybody can go to university basically now and get a degree. There's people getting degrees. You can get one anywhere all around the world, and you're in engineering and your qualifications essentially be recognized here in Australia.
Yep.
So to me, what we're looking for is a differentiation on practical ability to implement. So what you get out of by doing these competitions or attending these sort of meetups, trying to do stuff, is the development of those practical skills and apply that. So I think you get a huge value in going all in on that idea. And if competitions aren't your thing, jump on TAFE, have a look at there. They've got a lot of really great courses on soldering and, practical skills being taught properly. And once you know that, you're going to be able to dramatically improve your ability to build stuff.
Yeah.
So forever.
Yeah, great. So it's something I think we talk about once again quite frequently here on the podcast, is that building something in your own time. If we're in software development, somebody to go out and build their own app or build their own site, at least show your practical capability. And you can learn a lot by doing that. Sounds like it's a very similar story in that sort of, robotics or the hardware/software.
Big time. For us, it's the first step in our job application process.
Yeah.
We don't look at resumes. We just ask people to send us a video.
Yeah.
3 minutes. Show us you build anything, in your own time. Even if it's not necessarily directly in the technical role, maybe if we're hiring for assistance role or something like that within the business, show us you care about something.
Yeah.
And then on the tech side, just show us stuff you've made in your own time so you can just talk about it. We don't want to see stuff that you build at work. You're being paid to do that. And we don't want to see anything you build at university because you're basically doing that as part of a job.
Yeah.
So, and everybody's got that. That's the standard.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, once again, it's that differentiator, right? How do you differentiate yourself from the field? And so, taking something, building it on your own time. But probably the way that you hire, obviously, you've just mentioned there, ties really closely into who you are.
Yes.
Because you made mention of passion, right? So no one's going to be building stuff in their own time unless they're passionate about it. So it sounds like you're trying to, that passionate, that ability to go and do something, build something themselves, is something you value very highly.
Big time. So because I think if something happens in your mind when you're paying for something yourself and building something, it really changes your mindset on how you'd actually develop. And for us, Robotic Systems, the one question we're always asking ourselves when we're developing stuff is, would I buy this? Would I do this myself? And if it's not that, then, we don't do it for our customer.
Yeah, right. Nice. And I imagine there's quite a few projects under NDAs and under, other forms of projects that you just can't talk about. Let's say that.
Yeah.
But I also imagine you build some pretty cool things with your team over the past, number of years. If you had a top couple of projects that you've worked on that are most interesting, is there anything you could share with us?
100%. So there's some now that have gone all the way into commercialization.
Yeah.
So I think a good headline one is we connected with some farmers in Coonabarabran, yeah. And what they wanted to do was find weeds on a fallow. And a fallow is an area of land that's being rested with no crops on it. And they thought, well, if you could find the weed on the fallow and then tell their boom sprayers where they are, then the boom sprayers could just turn on their nozzles over the plants rather than having to blanket spray the whole field. So they rolled into our tent at AgQuip, which is a regional agricultural trade show, and with this idea. And over the last 5 years, we prototyped a whole bunch of different solutions of bringing it, how we could actually do this. And we've recently been commercialized, and the first units have been sold straight off the production line, and it's totally flipped the spraying industry on
its head.
How does
it work?
So it uses a combination of precision GPS, machine vision with specialized algorithms, laser range finding, drone aircraft, light aircraft, to ultimately discern living from dead plant material on a fallow. And we can cover around about 1,000 hectares a day, 1,000 football fields a day, and find plants as small as a 20-cent piece.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a great piece of technology developed right here in Newcastle. And it's really done the whole journey for us and turned somebody's understanding of a problem into a profitable machine.
Yeah, right. And then they'll obviously be able to sell that to other 100%. Customers around the world as well, right?
That's it. So it's all about they're focused on their business and selling the units. And we're focused on developing the tech and manufacturing it.
Yeah, right. For those that it might be a little bit less technical, can you give that just a little bit deeper insight into sort of that project itself? So, like, you mentioned, you know, a couple of like keywords that are going around at the moment. You're talking about machine vision, you're talking about drones. For those that don't know, can you provide a little bit more insights into exactly sort of how that would work?
Yeah, okay. So the for machine vision, it's essentially using cameras as the primary sensor, and then developing algorithms that can find interesting features within those images. And so we had to do a couple of things to make it work for single shot, because we had to come up with a camera that could tell a living plant from a dead plant. And then we had to come up with algorithms on top of that to be able to filter out things that were throwing the cameras off. So it's essentially the process of machine vision is doing what your brain is trying to do when you're looking at things.
Yeah.
So it's, I guess that's at a very high level what's going on.
Yeah.
I guess I'm trying to describe a couple of years of work in a few sentences, yeah. But that's kind of one aspect of it. The other part is precision positioning of those images, yeah, in the real world, so that other devices, in this case, large broadacre boom sprayers,
yeah,
can successfully identify those weeds.
Wow. Phenomenal.
Yeah, that's a good one. And another one, on the other end of scale, we're with mining companies. Yep. We manufacture the frag track system,
yep,
from Orica Mining. And they essentially what that does is a 3D camera system that looks at broken rock after a blast and analyzes how broken the rock is and gives it a fragmentation score,
yep,
that they can use to close the loop of the blasting process. So they came to us with a working device. They had two devices, but they couldn't scale out their manufacturing.
Yep.
So we reverse engineered their prototype product,
yep,
and then came up with a process to scale that out. And to date, we've manufactured over 60 units,
yep,
and we've been shipping them all around the world, and we've on the hook to produce another 60 from our Mayfield manufacturing facility.
So you got the manufacturing, so design, built, prototyped all here in Newcastle.
Absolutely.
All right. How does that play out with the manufacturing locally? Obviously, manufacturing in Australia doesn't have a really great reputation because of costs and I guess a lot of offshoring. How have you found the experience manufacturing locally here in Newcastle?
So manufacturing to me is just going through another metamorphosis.
Yeah.
It's just changing again. So for us, the way we manufacture, it's all about only doing the highest value tasks and nothing else. So way we do it is if we're getting circuit boards manufactured, we'll get them manufactured overseas.
Yeah.
They'll arrive here, we'll do the final quality checks and then a final assembly into completed units. So we maintain a globally competitive pricing
yep.
on all of our manufactured parts. So that's just not for electronics. We do the same thing with mechanical enclosures. So we can become globally competitive on pricing with our local quality levels as well.
Yeah, nice. Perfect. Oh, mate, it's really interesting and it's great to hear, once again, Newcastle's success story and sort of bringing some manufacturing quality to Newcastle as well, which is great.
That's it. No worries.
What's the plan? So obviously we've gone from, you made mention of, you know, you got some contracts as your past company went under. You've built to a team of 9 at the moment. What's the projections for the next 12, 24 months?
It's looking like we've been doubling in size pretty much every 12 months for the last 3 years. And it looks like we're going to double again. So we've gone from, so we're now at a team of 9. Looks like we'll get to about a team of 15.
Wow.
I'm hoping probably by the end of next year.
Wow.
At the current rate. And that's supported with some great new projects that we've won all around Australia. And as well as some great support from existing long-term key customers that we've built up a lot of trust with now and are now responsible for large amounts of their business.
Yeah, fantastic. And how's the recent COVID times affected your business?
It's actually been, without detracting from any of the bad things that happened from COVID, but it's been a real shake-up for us in a great way. When at the start of the year, the day Boris Johnson put us into lockdown, put UK into lockdown, I decided, look, it's only going to be a matter of time for us here. So I sent everybody home, bought some excellent noise-cancelling headphones for everybody, and it gave us, I can't describe exactly what happened, but by getting us out of our workspace in our offices, it shook up our thinking on how we actually work. And so we had to go all in on the idea of we had to make all of our processes digital and we had to entirely digitize our service offering. And in 3 months of working at home, I don't think we've ever worked so hard as a team together.
Yeah.
But we've created some excellent new ways we deliver value to the customers, and we're seeing the rewards for that now through some really, really great projects that I hope to come back here in 12 months' time and have, you know, 3 more for you.
Yeah, nice.
That have gone all the way.
Yeah, right. Has COVID, I know for a lot of organizations and just industries, COVID's it's broken down geographic boundaries. So what would have been, you know, an old Newcastle local company operating more locally with local clients, geographic boundaries have been broken down because, you know, you can't see somebody face-to-face anyway locally. So, you know, having a client local or having somebody on the other side of the country or world is just as easy going forward. So have more opportunities presented themselves for you through COVID?
Yeah, big time. So we're now competing and beating companies in Perth for local jobs there.
Yeah.
That would have never been possible before. And I think there's kind of two sides to that.
Yeah.
One is we've gotten a bit clearer on what we do and who we do it for. But the other big part of that is our customer base, mining guys, ag guys, you know, they definitely before COVID had a very negative view, I'd say as a general rule, of doing stuff over video chat. They would definitely insist on being in person. And now after six months of being forced to work at home because of all the big companies basically said, you know, policy, everybody go home, realize that it is possible. And so that has given us that opportunity to make that shift.
Nice.
The younger guys in those industries, it was never a problem for them. But a lot of the older guys and the way these businesses are structured, the power very much sits at the top. So the decisions sit there. But now it's totally changed.
Yeah, nice. You may mention your team made a very early move going remote. You mentioned headphones. Any other technologies that have really enabled that for you?
The headphones were probably the biggest game changer, but a good webcam as well.
Yeah.
There's definitely something that goes on when people are looking at each other's faces that you don't get on an email. So we also try to avoid sending emails now. We send videos.
Yeah.
Now, there's a lot of great apps out there for that. Microsoft's got something in it. The Loom stuff, which we use, has been really good to also save writing 1,000 words in an email in 45 yeah. minutes.
yeah.
So we've kind of gone down that way. We're getting off Microsoft at the moment. It hasn't worked for us. It doesn't work externally.
Yeah.
It only works internally, and I can't oh, we don't have enough resources to battle with it to make it work. So we're getting away from that and going to the Google offering at the moment. Yep.
Nice. Okay, good. There's some power in that, right?
Yeah.
So you're up to a team of 9. You're still hiring through COVID. You may mention before what you look for in sort of, some of your staff members, that passion. Is there any other sort of tips or hints that you would give to people that want to get into this industry to join an organization like yours?
Get out there and do something. You know, there's never a better time to get to be a maker. There's more resources available than there ever has been. And there's more challenges out there than there ever has been. And there's some really big ones out there. You can jump on, if you just Google Mine Challenges Australia, then you'll find a great list of big challenges that are put out by the industry of basically contracts for anybody who can solve it.
Yeah.
You know, get out there, start having a go. You know, there's never been less barriers to entry.
Yeah, nice. Mate, you're obviously a busy man, both technical yourself, still working from a technical perspective while being a director of a company of 9 now. How do you manage your day?
Well, I've actually gone post-technical. So there's about a year ago, I realized that I had pretty much hit the limit of what I was trying to do because I was trying to work selling hours, doing technical development. And it was kind of hamstringing everything we're doing. So I made the decision to basically go the other way and say, look, if we want to grow the business and make it a success that really the team deserves, that respect for somebody to steer the ship properly and not be focused on other things, then I had to give up technical. And I'd never thought I'd do it, but I have.
Yeah.
And so now I spend a lot of time talking to people and talking to a lot of customers, talking to new customers. And I didn't think I'd ever like it, but I've decided this is the only way.
Yeah.
And I ultimately want to deliver on what it is I started the business for and make sure we hit that.
So it's still very problem solving orientated, just more strategic and less technical.
Yeah, that's right. I've got an amazing team around. You know, for me now, my role is basically setting the goalposts and then standing back and letting them do their jobs.
Yeah, cool. From a technology perspective, I think there's two sort of career paths people as become more experienced go, and it's either continue down that technical route, becoming an actual just technical gun and like real technical expert in a field, or you start to go down the man management or the people management route where you start to manage a team. You've obviously gone down the people management route. I think there are still opportunities for technical experts as well. If you got any opinions on, you know, those two trains of thought, the two schools are either going down the people management or the technical.
Yeah, I guess my role might be a bit special in that there's under me, even though we're a relatively small company, I have a general manager.
Yeah.
And so he's very much looking into the business and he's looking after the people within the business. And then under him, there's a method lead for the two key disciplines we have, which is basically prototyping and manufacturing.
Yeah.
So they're really looking internal to the business at the processes and the team. My role is really looking outside. So I guess I can answer it from the point of view of within the teams. And I really think the answer is going to be, where do you think your maximum impact is going to be? Is it going to be in leading a team to hit those big goals that you're going for? Or is it going to be doing the work? And if you are most passionate about doing the work, then that is the answer. And if you think you're going to be better at managing the team, you're going to be passionate about that, then that is the answer. But the other thing I can definitely say is it's okay to try both. I would say if you're still saying that's not a good enough answer, I'd say do technical first, because you can definitely tell when it's easier to go up and out of technical, I think it is, than go back the other way.
I completely agree. I think it's easier to buy into a manager, especially in those technical roles, who has been there and done it before or has a really good insight into what you're doing. They might not be able to solve it at the same in-depth level as you if you're in that sort of technical role, but be able to buy into somebody that gets an understanding of what you're working on is significantly easier.
You've got to live the life. You've got to felt the pain.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So to really understand.
Yeah. Oh, man, I agree. So you're obviously down that route now. How do you manage the day though? Is there still, you know, there's still a lot of responsibilities. You may mention you move into the G Suite. Is there any tools within that, or are there any other software tools you use to get a productivity or to manage your day?
The big problem we've had is teeing up meetings with people for me now, talking to people.
Yeah.
And so a really simple, cheap tool out there that is worth its weight in gold, Calendly.
Yeah.
Or any of those calendar booking systems. I use Calendly. I have maybe 10 meetings a week, and I reckon every week it saves 3 hours of just back ping-ponging emails around and uncertainty and frustration. So that's probably my favorite one.
Yeah, I agree. From a learnings perspective, you obviously did a university degree. You've hired a number of people now, and you said you've got a really strong technical team. Is there any further learnings that you and your company sort of buy into, or anything you'd recommend? So outside of the university degree, other forms of learning that you would recommend for people?
There's a lot of value in those short courses online.
Yeah.
And a lot of value in picking a particular tool you want to use. If you're in the physical engineering space, say an electronics design package or a PLC programming language that has a really good hardware backup or something like that, and just becoming the guy in that.
Yeah.
Because if you can become really good at those things, then somebody will need that skill. So you'll be valuable. And that kind of gets a bit more diluted in the pure software world, because there is a lot of tools out there, because there's not a lot of barriers to entry for it. Whereas in the hardware world, there's a few less choices. So I guess talking hardware, there's a lot of tools to really good stuff out there. Pick the one that's probably got the most chatter around it.
Mm-hmm. What online providers would you recommend for those short courses?
We've had good success using the Udemy stuff.
Yeah.
And that's probably the main one.
Yeah.
In the microcontrollers world, any of the big manufacturers often provide serious training materials.
Yeah.
And the reason they do is because they want people to buy into their product ecosystem.
Yeah.
And a manufacturer that doesn't have a strong learning environment around it isn't worthy of your time. So don't choose them. If it's hard, don't do it. Pick the one that's just going to tell you the answer.
Yeah.
There's no prizes for struggling.
No, I completely agree. I think that's a really good comment as well. No, that sounds great. So you'd recommend people to continue with, you know, becoming that expert in a field, or just picking up short trainings?
Short training and hands-on stuff.
Yeah.
You know, for people coming out of uni right now, there's the biggest problem we see is practical skills.
Yeah.
TAFE offers courses. There seems to be a bit of a stigma around TAFE being the lower thing than university. The stats are at Robotic Systems right now that the majority of people have come through TAFE and university.
Yep.
Nobody has come through just a plain university degree,
because
they're typically useless on the ground.
Yeah. Yeah, I think TAFE does have a different offering as well when it comes to more practical skills. It does have a good reputation for, you know, that practical capability or practical learning.
Mm.
And especially in your space, as you said, for you are very hands-on roles, right?
Mm, yeah, absolutely. For us as a small business, we don't really have that many layers of stuff, right? You know, you've got to be able to be a one-stop shop to be able to do something, and you need to be able to, if you're writing software, you're going to be writing software on a piece of hardware.
Yeah.
You need to have not to the same level as the electrical engineer, but you need to understand how the electronics work, so you're not going to break stuff for starters. You're not going to write software that's totally incompatible with the real world.
Yeah, mate, completely agree. Outside of those online courses, are there any books that have really helped shape your career, or any books you'd recommend to others?
In terms of technical books, no, not too many technical books.
Outside of technical,
I'm on a bit of a journey at the moment, listening to a lot of different you know, business books as I kind of reframe my thinking around what my job is. Stealing Fire was a great one I read. Yeah. It's all about getting into the zone, which for us as a consultancy is what we're all about. So because we're selling time fundamentally. So how do we sell the best hour? How do we have the best hour in town? So one of the ways we do that is we have very structured days. We work early in the mornings, so we work 6 a.m. to 2:30.
Yeah, why that? I've seen that in your job ad, and I was like, wow, this is interesting. I'm really keen. I was going to ask it, but you've opened the door, 6 a.m. till 2 p.m. Tell me about it.
Human focus. So it's all about being, you're the sharpest you are the first thing in the morning, and we want to sell the best hours of the day. And, you know, as soon as you've had lunch, afternoons kick in. those hours are going to be not so great. And so coming back to, you know, what we ask ourselves is, would you buy that? And, you know, would you buy an hour where everybody's had, you know, Sambo's for lunch and feeling a bit sleepy sitting in the chairs at 3 o'clock?
Yeah.
And the answer is no. So we bring our day forward, and it's all about the team being able to be more efficient in the day, all working together, all focused on that time window and exiting at that time. So I don't allow overtime. There's 2:30, the whistle blows and it's like the Flintstones, you know.
Yeah.
Everybody out, and, you know, it'll come back tomorrow. And in that time, we're absolutely focused on what it is we're doing.
And hit it fresh.
That's it, fresh. And then you leave work at 2:30 and there's, you know, in some of the 6 hours of daylight left. So.
Yeah, right. How have you found, has that been a challenge in hiring other people that are not inclined to be up in the fives and starting work at six?
Look, it's not easy to get into. I can definitely say that if you're not that way inclined. But it is a requirement for what we do because of it is in our DNA.
Yeah.
And I've actually never had anybody say they don't want to do it anymore.
Yeah.
Because the day starts, the day ends, and that's it, done, job done.
Yeah.
There's definitely pains changing, but once you're in it, it's great.
Yeah, nice. I just think I'm always interested when you get somebody that does something differently, the reasons why and whether they've had that success with it. So it's good to hear that you are having success with it. You mentioned stealing fire and that being because you are reframing your learning. So you're in a different start of your career, your career down more that management route. How have you found the getting back into learning?
Getting back into learning, it's for me, I'm only ever motivated by fear.
Yeah. Right?
So I never felt fear at university other than right before the exam.
Yeah.
And that's when all the work happened. And I like robotics competitions because they gave a clear goal and the fear of not being able to get there. So it gave me a lot of motivation. So I've gotten back into learning because I've reframed what I'm thinking about for the leadership role of, well, I need to be able to deliver this for my team. So I need to really be, you know, that gives me fear.
Yeah.
I won't do that. And so I don't have any limitations for motivation. It's the full day for me of thinking, how can I make this a better business for this team to be effective in?
Nice. Outside of books then, any other podcasts, any other forms of learnings that you found really interesting or valuable?
Look, I listened to this podcast and, you know, this is my favorite one.
Good old bribery.
So, yeah, but there's, I think we've had a lot of value out of getting the right advice at the right time.
Yeah.
So, getting advice for things we're not good at. You know, when I first started out, that you couldn't have told me that. I just said, no, I'll figure it out myself.
Yeah.
There's no prizes for that. Chances are whatever you're doing is probably a solved problem.
Yeah.
You can either struggle and achieve that outcome, or you can just cheat and get the answer. Get the answer where you can. You'll definitely save yourself in the long run.
Oh, I completely agree. I'm a massive fan of knowing what you know and be good at that. And if it's something that's not in your sweet spot, like outsource it if you can. Whilst it might cost money, the time saving, both physical time actually doing it, but also the headspace that you have to give that problem that's already been solved, that's not your jam. I think if you can actually put a price on that, it'd far exceed any cost you actually pay another agency to do it.
Yeah, big time. And I mean, that's why we get hired, right?
Yeah.
Is to solve that problem for people and take them to where they want to go as quick as they can.
Yeah. Mate, you mentioned you were in Sydney before. You're back in Newcastle. You built your company in Newcastle. Why Newcastle?
So I'm not from Newcastle, Sydney originally.
Yeah.
And it was purely because I got the job with Orica.
Yeah.
And that kicked it off here, and I brought all those other jobs with me, hired somebody, and that kind of kept growing and growing as time went on. So in terms of why Newcastle, look, I'd love to say I had some big, you know, epiphany about it, but I didn't. Followed the work.
Yeah.
There was opportunity here. And the reality is now that, you know, I live here, I own a house here, my wife lives here with me. So it's a... who was also not from Newcastle.
Yeah. Shout out to Orica.
Yeah, shout out to Orica, bring people. And so, yeah, it's that's it. So we're here now, and
yeah.
the team's getting bigger. So I don't think we're going to be going anywhere anytime soon.
No, it's phenomenal. It's always good to hear of big organizations that help foster the growth of smaller organizations. Like, not only do big organizations employ a lot of people locally, but as I said, like, there's agencies that thrive and work with them and can grow and employ more people. So the flow and effect of their successes is great.
It's absolutely critical. How many companies, particularly, the big ones, there's a lot of people orbiting that, people building vehicles, like the big, large mechanical structures,
yeah.
Electronics and software is a new side of things in town. But behind that, you'll see a lot of the old industry stuff, sheet metal bangers, that sort of stuff. They all orbit these main manufacturers, and it's critical to have them as part of the pool.
Yeah, mate. It's been really insightful for me to hear again about another local Newcastle success story. Is there anything else you'd like to share with the community before we wrap things up?
Probably not directly. I'm at risk of talking too much off the cuff. So, yeah, I'd say get out there and support your local meetups. I think Newcastle has a disproportionate number of meetups for the size of the town.
Yeah.
We want to keep that going. It's hard right now with all the corona stuff. So, the online stuff is as good as it's going to be for now.
Yeah. When it comes back, we'll come back harder.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Mate, thanks again for your time. Thanks for the advice you provide the community. And again, really happy to hear of both your success and the success at Robotic Systems.
Thank you so much for having me.
Cheers.
Cheers. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of New Tech People. To stay up to date with all our episodes, our show notes, and past episodes, please visit www.newitechpeople.com.au. Thank you.